This is Generation Justice. I am Tamara Kalaki.
And I'm Erwin Rivera. Generation Justice is a multimedia project that trains youth to create media that inspires positive social change.
Over the last few years, cities across the U.S. have witnessed countless police killings of unarmed men and women of color, poor people, and those living with mental illness.
At the same time, from New York City to Ferguson, Albuquerque, and San Francisco, the community has stood up against police violence.
Tonight, we highlight the actions of the hashtag Frisco5, a group of San Francisco activists who launched a 17-day hunger strike against police violence and racism. We'll be joined by hunger strike participant and hip-hop artist Equipto.
The month of May is also Mental Health Awareness Month. We learn more about its history and importance with Anne Romero, a mental health advocate.
Our exciting community calendar will help you stay connected. We also have some powerful music tonight. The first song is called Woodcarver by A Tribe Called Red.
Hey! Put the knife down! Put the knife down! Put the knife down!
The hashtag Frisco5 are a group of San Francisco activists who recently ended a 17-day hunger strike to demand that Police Chief Greg Sir be fired or removed from his post.
This is a police chief and department with a long history of violence inflicted on communities of color.
Tonight, we feature hunger strike participant and Bay Area hip-hop artist Equipto to discuss police violence and racism in San Francisco, as well as the hunger strike.
We spoke to Equipto days after ending the 17-day hunger strike and being released from the hospital, and minutes after hashtag Frisco5's first press conference.
This interview was the first one he did with any media group after the hunger strike. Let's take a listen to Generation Justice fellow Kateri Zuni with Equipto.
My name is Kateri Zuni, and I'm speaking with Equipto, who also goes by Ilyich Sato. He's a hip-hop artist and producer from San Francisco. He and four other people, known as the Frisco Five, recently ended a 17-day hunger strike in protest of the San Francisco Police Department and called for the firing of the police chief, Greg Sir, after ongoing tactics of violence and racism. Equipto, welcome to Generation Justice. May I have you introduce yourself, please?
Hi, this is Equipto, San Francisco hip-hop artist, human being. I represent Solidarity Records, Black and Brown United, the Frisco Five, Frisco 500, Justice for Mario Woods Coalition.
Thank you for taking the time to speak with us, Equipto. What was the genesis of the Frisco Five hunger strike?
Well, basically, a lot of things have been going on with San Francisco in the last 8 years and some, but more or less and since Willie Brown into the Ed Lee regime. So what's been going on in San Francisco is gentrification, displacement, murdering by the police, homelessness, budget cuts in education. It's just at an alarming rate. It's like they're not trying to let you see it around the world or let alone around the nation of what's really happening in San Francisco. In the last year, there's been at least five murders that we just know about. Of course, there's been more, but have been profiled in this videotape form, some of them, as far as this Emil Carpenter Lopez, who was an immigrant from Guatemala who lived out here and trying to make a living to send money back to his family, was shot 6 times in his back. They said that he was attacking when he had shots in his back. They had Mario Woods, who was shot December 2nd, 2015, over 23 shots, 20-something shots on videotape. We have Alex Nieto, who was shot over 59 times by the hill, mistaking his taser for a weapon because he had a 49er jacket on. So this is all. And then there's Kenneth Hardin, who was shot, and they said he killed himself. They left him bleeding on the street for over 45 minutes. This is all going down in San Francisco under the watch of Chief Sir, San Francisco Greg Sir. Not to mention, he's been demoted twice before he even became chief as a tenant, as a police officer. So his track record, his resume, has already been well known and well publicized of how horrible job he's been doing for the last year alone with all these officers that have committed these murders They all have their jobs. They're back to getting paid. There's no consequences at all, anything faced for these police officers. So that's what's happening. And with the last one, Luis Gongora, who happened to be about a month ago, a homeless man who got shot within 30 seconds pulling up on the scene. After that happened, it was pretty much set in stone that we were going to do the hunger strike, because we had talked about it months prior of what we can do, certain actions. And when enough is enough, when that Luis Gongora happened, my mother had said that it's time to get it going. Yeah, so that's how it came about, pretty much, the hunger strike and the genesis and the foundation of where it came from.
Can you tell us your personal story of deciding to strike?
Well, my personal side of it would be, you know, my mother really wanting to do it and me being in support of her, as well as seeking justice and finding ways that we could bring these issues to the forefront, bring more attention to San Francisco issues, maybe make them nationwide, worldwide, you know, which a part of the mission. It was some of our goals as well. Hopefully some of these mainstream media people could cover it. So basically that was part of it. And it was rough, but I mean, it was a commitment. It was a committed thing that we really wanted to be a part of. We wanted to make it happen. And I think it was pretty much a success.
And can you describe the experience of being on hunger strike with your mother?
Well, it's worrisome, you know, when you're out there. But there was a lot of support. A lot of people came through with tents and sleeping bags and coconut water, and people just came to watch our backs and stood as security for us. So a lot of that, and a lot of our family, friends that helped and were a part of the Frisco Five, basically, but they weren't taking the hunger strike. They were our caretakers. They made it easier on me as far as worrying for my mother or myself, for that matter, you know, making sure I had the right vitamins or at least, you know, things like that. A lot of ups and downs, highs and lows, but a lot of it was a beautiful movement because it was all for the right cause. It was all for love and justice.
Thank you. Can you talk a little bit more about how other activists or even other just residents in the city have been responding?
Well, it's a majority of people have been in support of it, and a lot of people might not agree with the tactic, the hunger strike, but I think everybody agreed on the same goal. Well, we all want Chief Sir gone. We all want to get rid of Ed Lee. So I think a lot of activists, a lot of organizations came in supportive, talking to us, came through, and basically held us. We had a huge march, and it was, I mean, you had APTP involved. You had Asians for Black Lives Matter involved. You had the Nation of Islam involved. You have a bunch of organizations involved that maybe not normally would be together, but in solidarity of what the city is going through and the same goals, I think we had a lot of support. And that's what the majority of it was. But there were some people that didn't support, I guess. A lot of people don't understand what a hunger strike is, or they haven't seen it in their generation or in their time, let alone in San Francisco, where you have the best foods almost in the world. You know, you have so much variety of food. And for us to pull a hunger strike out here, I guess it was kind of like people didn't take it serious. But we were out here really putting our health and our lives basically on the line out here. I mean, I could honestly say that. But a lot of the people have supported, like organizations, but a lot of the people of the community, people, regular people, everyday people, they're coming by with their tea kettles, giving us tea from around the corner, people bringing us heat pads and all type of things, you know, flashlights, battery chargers, herbs and sages, blessing us with ceremonial, you know, prayers. It was really beautiful.
That's a wonderful picture you paint of community really coming out and supporting their own. I think that's wonderful. What is the message, I guess, of the Frisco Five?
The message would be to never give up and to keep fighting every day. That's the only way that we're going to bring any type of pressure or any type of change if we commit our life to it. You know what I mean? Like, that's the only way. I mean, I think the reason, a lot of the reason why the hunger strike did so well and traction-wise was a daily thing. People were there every day, whether it be the media or friends, and it just built up the community. Like I was talking, it built up a whole powerful community. Basically, that's what it did, you know?
How has the city government responded to the hunger strike?
the city government. At this point, yesterday, four supervisors have signed on to stay fire chief, sir. That might be San Francisco history. Four supervisors on board to stay fire chief. So before that, I mean, we didn't have no response until maybe 10 to 12 days. There was no love for us. And then the supervisors, a couple of them came and visited us, a couple of city officials. They just said that basically what we're asking for is impossible. That's what they're telling us in our face. What, to fire chief, sir, is impossible. To get rid of Ed Lee is impossible. And this is like, you know, in the midst of our hunger strike. So all four supervisors for four different districts said that they are with the hunger strikers in our demand, to fire chief, sir.
That's good. I'm glad that they're showing you support there in some way. Yeah. So with that, what are the next steps for the Frisco Five?
Well, right now, I don't know if you guys heard out there, but there's a movement that's grown to the Frisco 500.
Mm-hmm.
So Frisco 5, as we were hospitalized under doctor's orders, there was an uprising, a rebellion, a resistance that happened at City Hall the next day that we were hospitalized. So we were all in the hospital, and it was the community, it was the youth and the elders that came together and said, it's enough is enough. If you're going to let these brothers and this sister starve on the streets and not pay us any type of attention, then it can't go on no more, no more business as usual. So it basically went to a violent stage as how they were treating the youth. They really treated them in a military fashion. They came out with the riot gear, riot helmets, trying to intimidate them. All that Frisco 500 was trying to do was hold space and represents and bring some attention to what's going on. That's what is growing to a whole movement. We have things that have cultivated through the months, through the Mario Woods Coalition, through Alex Nieto Coalition, Emil Carr Perez, and we've had the black and brown community come together more than ever in San Francisco as far as what's been going on lately. We have the Bayview and the Mission together. It's something special that's going on. We feel we have great momentum right now. We have the world watching. The world is listening. And we just need everybody to bring pressure to Ed Lee and Greg Sir, everybody to bring these issues to the forefront of what's happening in San Francisco, what real citizens of San Francisco are doing. And we take pride of being from San Francisco that we're trying to restore and bring back. Frisco 5 is Frisco 500. We'll grow to Frisco 5,000, and we're seeking justice, and that's all. We're not going to compromise. We've had enough. Everyone here is woke. We're not stupid. We're not naive. We have a variety of people on our roster. I'm very excited about what's going to happen and what we're doing for San Francisco, and they need to watch out because we're coming at them.
That's really great that you describe all of these communities of color coming together and really showing up as a force.
Right.
You might be familiar with our own history of police violence out here in Albuquerque. That's also something that has, you know, been heavily covered, at least in our state. And I think one instance in particular made nationwide media coverage where our police force basically shot and murdered an unarmed homeless man in the foothills of our city. So, I mean, obviously, it's happening here in Albuquerque. It's happening in San Francisco. It's all over the country as our police forces become more and more militarized, I think. What is your message that you would share with other communities who are experiencing that same kind of police violence?
I would say stand up, organize. It's now or never, you know, and to teach the younger generations what's going on. I mean, that's really what's really important. And to let them know that it's a nationwide, worldwide struggle is going on everywhere. It's going to take real dedication. That's what I think. In order for people to really want change, it's time to organize and consolidate the struggles. You know, everything can't. You know, I think there's so many problems. Like we're San Francisco, just like everybody else. We have displacement. You have problems with the education. We have problems with the murder and the police. So I think there shouldn't be so many meetings. There shouldn't be so many protests. There need to be consolidated all into one. We don't need 200 people here. We don't need 300 people here. We need 700 people here. We need 800 people here. And I suggest that you take it to the steps of City Hall. Take it to the steps of the police department. you know, really let them know how you feel. Really let them know how you feel. Everybody voices matter, and it's time to do the research. You know, if we really, really care about what's going on, then you're going to do research. You're going to find out where the mayor is going to be. You're going to find out where the next police commission meeting is going to be. You're going to find out where a town hall meeting is for the community and stay involved. You know, it's now or never right now. I mean, a lot of us say things haven't changed. It's not changing. It's changed, you know, and I agree with that. But there's still chance, and I believe that we have hope. We have belief that we can overcome and we can restore some culture back into the city. Even if it's what, you know, it's what we get, we're going to start with some. But as long as it's ours, we're going to have
it. And I like how you mentioned culture. I think that's a really powerful way to assert our space, is bringing our cultures into the forefront. Equipto, is there anything else that you would like to share with us?
Well, I just like to share that one love for all the support out there, period, because none of this would happen without the people. I really learned the true definition of power to the people on this journey, whether it be a comment, whether it be, you know, people that physically came out, people that brought things, stopped by for 1 minute and brought something, you know, even the underground media, you know, the Latino media, the Black media, all the media that really covered what was going on out here. It was a beautiful journey.
Yes, thank you. And thank you for taking the time to speak with us again. You know, I just want to personally thank you for your fight and for your perseverance.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that very much.
Equipto, I am very grateful to have learned more about you and those who are a part of this hunger strike to recognize police violence and racism in San Francisco. Your courageous actions are greatly appreciated. Thank you for standing up for the people.
Equipto, we are so grateful for sharing your amazing story. I now have a better understanding of hunger strikes and that they are for good causes. Thank you so much for joining us.
This next song is a collaboration that Equipto was a part of. It is called Justice for Mario Woods by the Justice for Mario Woods Coalition.
This chief has resided and reclaimed it in a culture of hate, bigotry, racism, sexism, a disregard for Black life. We don't have to ask the question if Black Lives Matter in San Francisco. It's obvious Black lives don't matter in San Francisco.
We want justice for Mario Woods.
May is Mental Health Awareness Month.
This month is meant to break stigma surrounding mental illness and getting help.
And this year's theme is Life with a Mental Illness. People have taken to social media using the hashtag Mental Illness Feels Like to illustrate the ways mental illness affects everyday life and relationships.
To learn more, we're excited to be joined by Anne Romero, a native New Mexican who advocates for mental health at the state and national level.
Here is Generation Justice Fellow Polly Dinetclaw with Anne Romero.
Hello, my name is Polly Dinetclaw, and I'm sitting here with Anne Romero, who is a nationally recognized policy and award-winning mental health advocate and speaker. Thank you for joining us, Anne.
Sure, thank you so much for having me.
So Anne, the first thing that I'm going to have you do is just please introduce yourself.
Sure. So my name is Anne Romero, and I am very proud to be working in the field of mental health. I got started very early on, but I've been doing suicide prevention trainings since 2003. I'm nationally certified and trained through the Yellow Ribbon Program. And I really got involved in mental health when I lost a very close friend to suicide. I was 13. Just to know that someone who I cared about, someone who was very loved in the community, very young, my friend was only 15 when she died, just to know that there were young people who really felt this immense pain that was so overwhelming and felt like this world would be better off without them really impacted me. And so that really set the stage for me to work and learn about mental health and how to combat suicide. And so it's really kind of been my lifelong work and my passion. And so I really love what I do. I love people and I love life. So definitely a great path for me to go into.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Anya.
Sure, thank you.
And can you tell us about the history of Mental Health Awareness Month?
Sure. So since 1949, May Mental Health Month has been observed nationally, but it wasn't until 2013 that President Obama actually officially declared May as National Mental Health Awareness Month. And so as an advocate, I've been working on this issue for a very long time, started out in my own community. And in 2005, I worked alongside Senator Pete Campos, who sponsored a bill that I wrote. And it was a Senate Joint Memorial that would implement suicide prevention training in all New Mexico schools. It passed, became one of the earliest pieces of legislation related to suicide prevention in New Mexico to successfully pass the state legislature, and that garnered national attention. I met Congresswoman Grace Napolitano, who is actually the lead congressional member both in the House and the Senate on issues pertaining to mental health. She's the founder of the Mental Health Caucus, and as fate would have it, I actually got to work for the congresswoman for 7.5 years, and part of my duties was to oversee the Congressional Mental Health Caucus, which is close to 100 members of Congress, bipartisan, and really work on national mental health policies. So when I got to Capitol Hill, there was about a week that was designated for May Mental Health Month, and so I thought, we should be doing events all month. And so we started hosting events every single week in May. We had national advocates come from all over the country. We had the first official congressional photo. So now every year, members of Congress pull together. They wear lime green, which is the color for mental health. And we take a huge photo on the steps of the Capitol. And so it's really turned into this big event on not only on Capitol Hill, but nationally. And so we're really proud to bring National Mental Health Month here to New Mexico.
Thank you for sharing that history with us, Anne. Sure. I really appreciate it. Particularly here in New Mexico, why do you think May Mental Health Awareness Month is so important?
Unfortunately for New Mexico, we rank within the top states for suicide. Nationally, we also rank second in the nation for youth suicide deaths. So that's ages 14 to 25. Historically, our behavioral health system has not been robust. And so it's really imperative that we start to look at this from an action standpoint. I think we can look at the statistics. We can look at the resources that we lack to really stand and say that enough is enough. We need to work towards comprehensive behavioral health care in New Mexico. There's a lot of families who are struggling. They are unable to find resources for their family members to get help. A lot of the providers themselves, they have, you know, they're filled to capacity in terms of clients that they're seeing. And specifically when it comes to working with children, we have very limited behavioral health providers who are licensed to work with children. We live in the most beautiful state in the country. We have a rich history. We have such a diverse culture. Just to know that our people are suffering and there's very little out there to make sure that they are taken care of is very, very important. One of my favorite quotes is, you know, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step. So this is definitely our first step.
This month, there are a few events coming up to raise awareness around mental health. So can you tell us a little bit more about those?
This has actually taken a little over a year to organize. We have a series of events, really, really awesome, that the city of Albuquerque has now joined us, and they are one of the sponsors for May Mental Health Month. The city council just issued a proclamation declaring May as Mental Health Month in Albuquerque. We also have an art event, which is bringing together folks and artists from around the community. There's students who have painted art pieces that's done through Art Groove that will be benefiting the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. To kind of help cap off May Mental Health Month, First Choice Community Clinic will be hosting a mental health fair on Tuesday, May 17th at First Choice Community Clinic in the South Valley from 10 to 4 p.m. And then we will be hosting a community mental health panel folks can come, they can learn about mental health, they can get a blood pressure screening, they can get an eye exam, and they can also learn more about how they can get a mental health screening as well.
Those sound like some really great and exciting events, Ane. Thank you for sharing them with us.
Sure, thank you, and we hope to see you all there.
What do you hope comes out of this month of celebrating mental health awareness and also bringing attention to this really important issue?
So I think one of the key things that we want is we just want people to start getting involved. We want people to, we want to create awareness. We want families to come out. If they're worried about themselves or someone that they love, we want them to know that there is hope and that there is support out there. So I think that that is really the overall message. We're also looking to really get advocates and organizations to start working together because this is such a big issue that affects each and every one of us. One out of every five Americans will suffer from a mental illness at least one time in their life. And so we really just want individuals to start collaborating together. We want to start sending the message that we can only impact people's lives and start saving lives if we all start working together. Which is exactly what we are seeing happening. It's just amazing to see organizations and advocates have a home where they can come and they can really do this amazing work and really have some really positive impacts on their own communities. So we're really hoping to expand that more to include Southern New Mexico and to get to all corners of the state.
I really like how you are trying to incorporate the entire state. I feel like I say this all the time because I'm from McKinley County. Everything is so centered around Bernalillo County. But personally, at my school too, we had a young person in our class commit suicide. And so from there, our school took it very seriously and provided a lot of support, sort of the resources available. So I really, I want to thank you for your advocacy because, like you said, all of us are touched by mental illness in one way or another. It's actually one of the things that I personally am committed to talking about and bringing light to because my family has been touched by this issue and it's really hard to see people in your community suffering, and it's really hard to deal with the heaviness of this topic. Mm-hmm. But I want to thank you so much for your advocacy and for continuing to make New Mexico, you know, a better place.
Sure. Well, you know, it's my dream, and that's my long-term goal is to make New Mexico number one in behavioral health care. I want to make it a place where every child and man and woman in our state just the same way as when we go, what do you do if you're on fire? Stop, drop, and roll. I want everyone, when we ask the question, if you or someone you know is in crisis and needs mental health services, where can you go and who can you call? And I want us to get to the point where everyone knows the answer to that. And the importance of each community having ownership of May Mental Health Month or activities is because is exactly what you were saying is that a lot of times we do events that are in the Bernalillo County area, but the resources that we have here are not available in McKinley County or up in northern New Mexico. And so it really does those communities a disservice to kind of tell them, here's everything that we have. And then they go back to their own communities and they lack those resources. So it's really about empowering communities to identify what do they have in their community, and if they don't have that resource in their community, what can they start doing to create those support systems?
Are there any resources you can share if anyone listening needs them?
Definitely. Well, if you're on social media, definitely we encourage folks to use the hashtag MHM2016. If you happen to live in a part of New Mexico that's very rural and you can't get out to an event, you can do a selfie wearing lime green, which is the color of mental health, the lime green ribbon, or holding up a sign saying why you support mental health. For individuals who are interested in learning about what events are taking place throughout New Mexico, they can actually go to the website ACHR NM.org. That stands for the Albuquerque Center for Hope and Recovery, New Mexico.org. If folks need someone that they need to talk to, sometimes you just are having a tough day. Sometimes you don't really know what's going on. We all have struggles. And the one thing that we always say is every one of us is facing a struggle that many of us have no idea about, whether it's finals, whether it's family issues, whether it's, you know, a recent breakup, a job loss, whatever is going on in your life. We want to let people know that it's okay to ask for help. You should never be ashamed, embarrassed, or afraid to reach out. So there is a national crisis hotline number, which is 1-800-273-TALK. So 1-800-273-8255. And it's a confidential hotline that is available 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. And anyone can call that number and they will be connected to a professional crisis intervention specialist who will be able to provide them with any direct resources that are in their community, or just be there to talk to them if they need somebody to chat with. The one thing that I have learned, especially from working with young people, I mean, I've sat across teenagers who have attempted suicide and have really been in some of the deepest, darkest moments of their life. And they have been able to pull through that by seeking treatment, whether that's through talk therapy or medication, or by going to talk to a counselor. But whatever it is that you're going through, don't go through that journey alone. You know, we are definitely here. Reach out and talk to someone.
Is there anything else you would like to add, Ani?
I would definitely just like to end by saying thank you to you and your partners for allowing us to come and talk about May as National Mental Health Month today. Also would like to thank all of the countless organizations for their time, for their dedication, for sharing their heart and their soul. Some of our participants are individuals who have been impacted by mental illness or who have lost a loved one to suicide. And so it's not easy to do this work. Thank you to Generation Justice. The work that you all do is amazing, and it starts with youth. You know, they always say youth are the leaders of tomorrow, and I always say that the youth are the leaders of today. And if you would like to learn more, you can go to the Albuquerque Center for Hope and Recovery website and send me an email or give us a call.
Ani, thank you for sharing your vision, your beautiful vision with us, and talking with us about this important issue.
Sure, thank you. And everyone out there, wear lime green for May Mental Health Month to show your support. Let it strike up a conversation. So thank you all again so much for having me.
For Generation Justice, I'm Polly Dinetclaw.
Ani, thank you so much for being a dedicated and genuine advocate for our mental health community. It is always an honor to learn how you are helping New Mexicans stand in solidarity with our relatives living with mental illnesses. You are greatly appreciated.
Ani, listening to you, I learned that we are ranked as one of the top states for suicide and being second in the nation for youth suicide, which is upsetting because this should not be happening in our wonderful state.
This next song is called Who Am I by Justin Allison.
This song is for anybody who's been suicidal. They've been backed into a corner, they don't think that they can get out. They don't think it's gonna get better. Well, I've been there before, and I promise you it does. I thought my situation was the worst, I thought I had nothing to live for, but I promise you it gets better. My friend was scared that he would lose his life. He decided one night it was a God-given right to make the choice of either being dead or alive. No one was around, no one to write the time down.
We've reached the point in our show where we take some time to celebrate our community.
Here's our kinder host, Christina Rodriguez and Edward Cruz.
Thank you, Tamara and Edwin. It's time for Community Calendar. I'm Christina Rodriguez.
And I'm Edgar Cruz. What's coming up this week, Christina?
Our first event to look out for is Lobo Slam's final show this Wednesday, May 18th.
Finals at UNM have just ended, and Lobo Slam is also wrapping up the semester strong. It's the last show until next semester, so you'll want to catch this all-ages open mic and slam.
The featured poet for this slam is national competitor and aspiring novelist Talisha Johnson.
She's competed on a national level at both the Women of the World Poetry Slam and the Individual World Poetry Slam.
And last year, she released her debut poetry collection, Falling in Love with Picking Myself Up. You don't want to miss her perform.
Again, it's this Wednesday, May 18th at Winnings Coffee at 7 p.m.
For more information, you can search Lobo Slam on Facebook. This is also a great way to keep track of all of their future slams.
Our next event is a documentary later this week at the Guild about Eva Hesse.
That's this Friday, May 20th at 8 p.m. There will be a screening of the documentary and a discussion with the director afterwards.
Eva Hesse is one of America's foremost post-war artists. She made sculptures using latex, fiberglass, and plastic.
The cool thing about Eva is that she's one of the few women in the 60s to make it into the mainstream and to be taken seriously in a field that was dominated entirely by male pop artists.
If you can't make it this Friday night to watch the film and chat with the director, but you still want to check out the film, you're in luck.
There will also be screenings at both 3 p.m. and 8 p.m. this Friday, all the way through next Thursday.
If you're still busy during the week, we have an event this weekend for all you young leaders.
This Saturday, there will be a Youth Advisory Council meeting by Talking Talents Youth Leadership.
Talking Talents Youth Leadership is inspiring tomorrow's environmental leaders today.
They do a lot of cool work combining environmental advocacy with life skills. Their meeting this weekend is featuring Jennifer Owen White from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, who will be talking about successful public speaking methods.
Then, Kari Malcolm from the Cibola National Forest Service will be helping build resumes and giving advice.
Not only that, but there's going to be food and drinks as well.
It will be at Bakeki Open Space inside the Environmental Education Building.
Again, it's this Saturday morning from 10 to noon. And if you want more information, you can talk to Betsy Fullreader at 505-289-7406.
We have another event this weekend for all the moviegoers out there. There will be a screening of No Más Bebés.
This event is being hosted by Young Women United at the Guild.
The movie is about thousands of women throughout the last century who have been unknowingly sterilized after giving birth, many who were Spanish-speaking immigrants.
After the screening, there will be a discussion on the sterilization of women in New Mexico and how we can ensure that all women have access to information, education, and resources.
And we'll walk away with knowledge about LARCs, long-activating reversible contraceptives.
For more information, you can call the organizers at WIWU at 505-831-8930.
If you're trying to venture out into nature this weekend, we have an event for you too.
Of course. The next Esequia Walk and Talk is this weekend, May 22nd.
This Esequia Walk and Talk is going to be at the Sanchez Farm Open Space at 10 a.m.
These walk and talks are being held by CESOS, the Center for Social Sustainable Systems.
They're part of El Agua Sagrada initiative that raises consciousness on how important it is for us to protect and preserve precious water resources and traditions.
Through the walk and talk, community members can give the history and stories of the Esequia and also encourage us to improve our own health and our connection to the land.
If you have any questions about the event, you can contact organizer Virginia Necochea at 505-304-8724.
And that's it for this week's community calendar. I'm Christina Rodriguez.
And I'm Edgar Cruz. Thanks for joining us. Now back to our hosts, Tamara and Edwin.
Thank you, Christina and Edgar, for that awesome community calendar.
Now we have another song for you. It's called Heart and Soul by Equipto featuring Mike Marshall.
San Francisco, home to the Golden Gate Bridge, Fisherman's Wharf, and the cable car.
Thank you for joining us this evening as we have celebrated Mental Health Awareness Month and learned more about the actions of the hashtag Frisco5. We would like to thank Ane Romero and Equipto, also known as Ilich Sato, for joining us on this evening's show.
And thanks again to our amazing calendar hosts, Christina Rodriguez and Edgar Cruz.
Thank you to Kamaria Umi for engineering this evening's program. Production assistance came from Kateri Zuni, George Luna Pena, Christina Rodriguez, Polly DeNetclaw, Jennifer Lim, Alden Bruce, and Roberta Rael.
Stay connected with us by checking our website, generationjustice.org, where you can listen to our past radio programs, see music playlists, read our blogs, watch videos, and much, much more. Our podcasts are also available on iTunes, so be sure to subscribe.
We're also active on social media, so please like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter and Instagram.
Generation Justice is funded by the W.K. Keller Foundation, with additional funding from the McCune Foundation, Conanma Health Foundation, and of course all of you who have contributed to our project by visiting our website and clicking donate. Coming up on KUNM is Spoken Word, so stay tuned. I'm Erwin Rivera.
And I'm your co-host, Tamara Kalaki. To end our program tonight, we will leave you with a few closing songs.
See you next Sunday at 7 o'clock.
Ebanompa, Daliha.
It's too late to apologize. My dad's dad's twin brother died there. It's too late to apologize. My friend's dad died 2 months too late. He didn't hear the apology. It's too late to apologize. 50,000 Indian kids are unaccounted for. It's too late to apologize. I can't think or speak in my own language. Cayuga, Onondaga, Mohawk, Newhawk. No, I won't stop. The rain, the pain, and through the insane, I see the healing. I see the feeling.
Shut it down.
Police brutality.
Shut it down.
The new Jim Crow.
Shut it down.
Mass incarceration.
Shut it down.